to the races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for racing and breeding in the Mid-Atlantic. On the web at theracingbiz.com. On the radio, on ESPN Richmond, it's Off to the Races. Here's Nick Hahn.
And we'll be off to Arkansas a little bit later in the show. The feature race of the day, the Rebel Stakes at Oaklawn Park. Thanks for spending your Saturday morning with us on Off to the Races, powered by The Racing Biz. Johnny Cash and the Black Crowes bringing us some Arkansas sound into this edition of the show. On today's show, we'll speak with Daryl Wood here in a few minutes. We had a little bit of a teaser event this week with the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's 1973 Triple Crown run in front of us, a little ceremony up in Ashland to discuss some of the events surrounding this historical anniversary event. And we'll talk to Daryl about that here in just a few minutes. Amy Moore is the Virginia breeder of Forte, who was leading the point standings until they ran the Risen Star last week. That we'll recap here in a moment. Amy Moore has a farm up in Millwood, Virginia, Southgate Farm, and we'll talk to her about her interest in this year's Kentucky Derby. Scott Wyckoff is an award-winning mainstream journalist. He's won an Edward P. Murrow Award, but he's also won an Eclipse Award and an Old Hilltop Award. He's a mainstream journalist, but he loves horse racing, and we'll have Frank Vespi chat with him here in about 30 minutes or so, and then, of course, Derby Bill Watson in the late half of the show, the anchor leg. I'm sure he'll have some Arkansas music himself as we talk about the feature race today, which is the Rebel Stakes. Let's go back to last week and get a little sound in our ears about the racing that was at the fairgrounds last week. A full field of 14. There is a lot of interest in this year's Kentucky Derby. Fields are full with in the prep races leading up. Derby Bill's pick in the race was the horse that broke his maiden at Colonial Downs, Two Fills, with Jareth Loveberry aboard. I took Harlow Cap. I was trying to find a little bit of price. The favorite in the race was Victory Formation, but in the Risen Star, in a race where the lead changed five times, let's hear how they finished up in the Risen Star.
These leaders coming toward the quarter pole, it's Harlow Cap as Two Fills looms up on the outside toward the rail, looking to stay this pace as they straighten for home, is Determinedly with under a quarter of a mile to run. Coming down to the final furlong, Two Fills, Harlow Cap, Sun Thunder gets through toward the inside as they come down toward the final 16th. Getting in between horses, Angel of Empire, and farther out is Tabitz Conquest, who's also mustering a late rally past the 16th. And here's Angel of Empire for Luis Saez. Angel of Empire in the Risen Star Stakes. Angel of Empire has won it from Sun Thunder. Two Fills third, Tabitz Conquest fourth.
Yeah, Two Fills there gives Derby Bill the head-to-head over me, finishing third. But it was Angel of Empire, bit of an upset winner there at over 13-1, paying $29.40 for Luis Saez aboard. Brad Cox, the Albach family stables, the winning owners there. Congratulations on those connections. And the trifecta in the race with 16-1 Sun Thunder finishing second for 50 cents, paid $735.20. That's a pretty good ROI on your 50-cent trifecta bet. And so Angel of Empire earns 50 points. This was the first of the 50-point races and moves ahead of Forte for the moment. 54 points for Angel of Empire. Forte sitting there with 40. Instant Coffee has 32 points. And Forte is going to run in the Fountain of Youth Stakes next week. Two Fills is fifth in the standings. Looks like his next start will be in the Bluegrass Stakes on August 8th. Two Fills ran a race, actually had the lead there for a moment. And typical of these races in the prep this year, we don't really see this phenomenon very often, but all of these prep races seem to have horses that are coming off the pace. So that's maybe something to keep in the back of your mind as you're working toward your Kentucky Derby pick and handicapping coming through. Angel of Empire, Litigate, Hit Show in the Withers, Rocket Can in the Holy Bull, even the Bob Lewis, which was a four-horse field. Newgate came from fourth to win that race. So horses coming off the pace this year is something we don't typically see. Let's introduce Daryl Wood to the show with his appropriate bumper music. Little Arkansas music to get me going, but Carbon Leaf wakes up Daryl Wood. That and a couple of dog barks will do it on any Saturday morning. And Daryl Wood joins us on Off to the Races. Good morning, Daryl.
Good morning, Nick. How you doing today?
Doing fine. I'm feeling good. A little overcast condition here, but we stayed away from the sleet here in Charlottesville, and looking forward to springtime. Not looking forward to the allergies, which are getting to me a little bit in the late half of this week with the 80-degree day that we had, but wow, spring is going to be super here in Virginia.
Yeah, no, looking forward to it, and Carbon Leaf is playing up in Leesburg later on this evening, so I've got to decide if I want to risk my life and take I-95 up in the rain, but we'll figure that out. But it's Rebel Stakes Day, so yeah, it's a great day right in the heart of Derby prep season.
I saw they're coming to Charlottesville here soon, too, if you hadn't heard that yet.
Yeah, 3 weeks.
Back. Yeah. Nothing gets by you when it comes to Carbon Leaf. Hey, tell us a little bit about this Secretariat event that was held at Randolph-Macon College or in Ashland or right there at the edge of the campus there. It's not a big place there, but it's the home of the big horse. The center of the universe is the center of Secretariat's universe this week, and some plans underway for an unveiling.
Yeah, really cool event, Nick. You know, this is obviously the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's Triple Crown run back in 73. And I think a lot of your listeners probably know there's been a movement to try to get a life-size bronze monument of Secretariat up in Ashland. And it's going to cost about $600,000 in fundraising efforts to be able to make that a reality. Well, the kickoff to this fundraising campaign and to kind of enlighten the public on some of the events that might take place around this anniversary were held up at Randolph-Macon on Monday night. And Kate Tweedy was there, the daughter of Penny Chenery, Secretariat's owner. As importantly, Jocelyn Russell, who was the sculptor of this amazing creature. It's a life-size statue of Secretariat, and it was modeled after his Belmont win as he crossed the finish line. So she showed pictures and what the monument's going to look like at Ashland. So I think the fans, I think they're going to trailer the monument up to Ashland for the annual birthday celebration, which I believe is April 1st up at Randolph-Macon. And then it's going to stay on a trailer and go around the country to some of the bigger racing events so the public can really appreciate this this great statue. And it just Jocelyn did a long presentation about the painstaking efforts it took to create this and to everything that went into this multi-year project. But right now it's based at a foundry in Oklahoma, and it's going to be trailered, if all goes well, to Ashland here in a little more than a month. And, you know, details on all this is going to come out probably in about a week or 10 days, but it's going to be a great way for Virginians to really embrace this legend this close to Richmond, right up in Ashland on the Macon campus.
Yeah, the unveiling is April 1st, which is part his birthday. Secretariat was actually born on March 30th, so he was so fast he actually beat his own birthday. just a phenomenal horse. And of all places, Randolph-Macon. I mean, you know, Jake went to Hampton Sydney, big follower of Hampton Sydney, their arch rival. Randolph-Macon has everything right now.
Of course, with it would be based Nick, in the farthest corner of the campus, closest to the railroad tracks in the Ashland Visitor Center. And I know Rita McClenny from Virginia Tourism was there, and just talking about the opportunities for tourism with Secretariat fans, just not just around the country but around the world, that would come to this area to experience it and take pictures and all that good stuff. So it was really quite exciting.
Oh, I'm just toying there with Randolph Macon, our arch nemesis, who had a nice win. They play Roanoke today, by the way, in the ODAC tournament. Hampton-Sydney draws Guilford. So you have to understand, Randolph Macon, when it comes to basketball and the ODAC here recently, they're like the Patriots, you know. So it's as a Bills fan, you can appreciate
a little bit of envy there.
And by the way, just rounding that up, 3:30 the championship game, if form holds, you know, could be Randolph Macon in Hampton Sydney. So keep that on your calendar for tomorrow. The Harness meet April 1st, as well as the kickoff date at Shenandoah, Shenandoah Downs. It's looming out there.
Talk about a conflict. You know, opening day of Harness, and yet it's the day that this magnificent statue is going to be unveiled for the first time here at in the Richmond area. So, yeah, I'll be up in Woodstock. But, yeah, it's exciting. We've got 7 weeks of Harness racing in spring in Virginia for the first time since 1998. So very excited about that. In about a week or so, we'll know all the stables and horsemen that are coming to compete there. But, yeah, April 1st, running on Saturday and Sunday at 1 o'clock, including Derby Day, including Mother's Day, including April Fool's Day. So lots of chances, and Easter Sunday as well. So great opportunities on holiday weekends to come out up to the Shenandoah Valley, enjoy nature, and harness racing.
Yeah, absolutely. Daryl, we appreciate you giving us the update. We'll keep tracking Secretariat the best we can, whether he's on the rails or on the ground and on the track. But we appreciate you sharing your experience, your travels this week. And I bet you'd never thought you'd be traveling across Virginia as much as you do these days.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. And I'm looking forward to listening to Amy more, because that's such a great story heading into the Run for the Roses here in a couple of months.
She's up next here on Off to the Races. Daryl, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Sounds good, man. Thank you.
Great. Daryl Wood leading off to the Races, and mentioned Amy Moore. The horse that she bred, Forte, scheduled to run in the Fountain of Youth Stakes next week. Want to introduce her to the show here, Amy Moore, the proprietor of Southgate Farm up in Millwood. Many of us know Millwood is the little cutoff that gets us up to Charlestown. Takes about 5 minutes off your trip. You go through Millwood there if you're driving from the south, or especially the southeast. But Amy Moore is there, and she joins us on Off to the Races this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing great, and we appreciate you spending some time with us on Off to the Races. Just an interesting story as someone that was involved in horse racing at a very high level, and then took a little bit of time off, like 3 decades, to pursue your professional career, and then came back to horse racing in your retirement. And now it started off with a horse that we got to know, Queen Caroline, back in 2016, which was the first horse that you would own, at least in maybe I'll put that as a form of a question. That was the first horse you became an owner of. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. I had ridden horses in my youth that were owned by other people, show horses, ponies and hunters, but Queen Caroline was the first horse I bought for myself and owned myself.
Yeah, Queen Caroline gave a very exciting win for you in the 2016 Brooke Mead Stakes, which was run up in Maryland in those days, as Colonial Downs was shuttered from 2013 to 2019. We want to actually give Dave Rodman's call of that race. We have it here. Here's Dave Rodman providing the call of the 2016 Brooke Mead Stakes.
The top of the stretch. It's Hooligan, a narrow lead for 6-1, 13 flat, but Queen Caroline is set down by Cintron on the outside to challenge for the lead. Hooligan is under pressure and driving, and Secret or Not is chasing from third. They've got a furlong left to go. Queen Caroline and Hooligan and Secret or Not out of the center of the course. Queen Caroline, Secret or Not on the outside. Queen Caroline and Alex Cintron. Queen Caroline ridden out and rolling home.
Yeah, it turned out to be a very impressive win for Queen Caroline and a very exciting moment for you. You exercised horses for Del Carroll Sr., coming out of Raleigh, North Carolina, of all places, not exactly Main Street when it comes to horse racing. And then the first horse you buy becomes a stakes winner. Tell us about how you felt when Queen Caroline won the Brook Mead back in 2016.
Oh, it was great. I had bought her and had high hopes for her, but as a two-year-old, she ran twice and finished last both times, beaten by 20 or 30 lengths, I think. So I was thinking my foray into horse racing was not going to be a big success. In fact, I thought I'd have to go to the track with a paper bag over my head. But once we switched her to turf, she had found what she wanted, and it was very exciting to see her come on and win stakes races and be a successful racehorse.
So I actually did a story on the racingbiz.com back then, and you were talking, you're actually quoted here, is we're looking to move into graded stakes company. We tried that a few times and got close. We're not scared. We're going to keep trying. One day we'll get there. We hope that gets her confidence and that'll come on and we'll do well in her next outing. One day we'll get there. What was there for you?
Well, I was hoping to get some graded black type, but the closest she ever got, I think, was a fourth in the Gallaret Stakes, which is a grade three stakes run at Pimlico. So we never quite got the graded black type, but she was a good racehorse, and I retired her and hoped she'd be a successful broodmare.
And she's having, not only did she have a good start for her racing career, but it looks like she's going to have a great start to her second career as a broodmare. Queen Caroline is the dam of Forte, who is sired by Violence. Queen Caroline, a Blame mare herself. Tell us a little bit, and thank you for the pictures that you sent, by the way. It's great to see a horse like Forte roaming the grounds of a Virginia farm, and you sent me so many of those. Do you have the foaling pictures, just so our listeners know? The horse was actually foaled in Kentucky, but was brought back to Virginia. Tell us a little bit about the early life of Forte and your memories of having such a promising colt on your grounds.
Well, he was a beautiful colt from day one. I had bred the mare to Violence, who is himself a very good-looking, athletic stallion, and I was hoping to get something that was a good blend of the mare and the stallion. You don't always get that as a breeder, but on this occasion it worked out very well. I got a foal who's really the spitting image of Violence. He's got the same coloring and the same athletic build, and he also, I think, has the mare's racing temperament. And so I was really pleased with what I got.
Forte had just was the second choice in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile last year. The Fountain of Youth next week will be his first start in 2023. He's been working well at was it Palm Beach Downs down in Florida. We actually have the call here of the win in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Let's listen to that.
K-Rock is the leader as the field makes their way for the far turn. He's a length and a half in front, and his stablemate is second now. National Treasure is second on the outside of Hurricane J. And then it's Curly Jack. Forte has come under a ride now. He's five lengths off the lead, being asked for more run, but he is picking up his stride, and he's going three wide, and he's coming up on the outside of National Treasure, and he's coming up after Cave Rock as they turn for home. Cave Rock cuts the corner. Forte on the outside. National Treasure between them. Verifying is next. Cave Rock is taken on here by Forte. The two of them coming down to the wire. Forte on the outside. Cave Rock along the rail. And Forte has upset Cave Rock to win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Jose Ortiz with a ride there with Todd Pletcher, the trainer. When he won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, I mean, Queen Caroline was an exceptional moment for you, but you must have been through the roof when he won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Oh, absolutely. I was there at the races there at Keeneland for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And before the race, Cave Rock was everybody's pick, except mine, I would say. He was being touted as the horse most likely to win a Breeders' Cup race, and Forte took it to him and ran past him. So that was very exciting to see, and a lot of fun to be there in person.
Forte was a was sold as at auction as I think was $80,000, and then later $110,000. Mike Rapoli is the owner of that horse. Obviously, you certainly maintain interest as with Breeders' Awards with this horse, but I mean, just having a piece, an interest in a horse like this, four wins and five career starts. Only loss was in the Sanford Stakes. Secretariat lost at Saratoga, so I mean, no shame there. But it must be very promising looking forward. Where are you going to watch the race next week at Fountain of Youth Stakes?
Well, I don't think I'll go to Florida for that, so I'll be here in Virginia watching it on live stream and certainly rooting Forte on. He's had a remarkable career so far, and I'm hoping he goes on from here to do even more remarkable things.
At 40 points... Go ahead.
Since I own the mare, I still have an interest in his success beyond just the interest of a proud parent watching a colt she bred be successful on the track.
At 40 points, he's pretty much eligible for the Kentucky Derby starting gate right now. That's kind of been the line. It's moved a little bit forward and aft of 40 in the 10 years or so that they've been running it, so the horse doesn't have to do a whole lot. Have you made any plans for the first Saturday in May to be in central to western Kentucky?
Well, I don't want to jinx him, but I am certainly looking at going to the Kentucky Derby and taking a bunch of friends and family, and I hope we'll be there on the first Saturday in May and be cheering for Forte.
Great. We'll be doing as well. How is Queen Caroline doing, by the way? How is she? Is she on the grounds there with you?
No, she's in Kentucky, and she had a cover by Flightline yesterday. So we're hoping
that
she'll be in foal and have a Flightline foal eventually.
Flightline, of course, a dominant winner of the Breeders' Cup Classic last year. So, well, good luck on your. We wish you continued success. These ventures, these first-time ventures of you, have proven to be successful, and we just hope it continues on for you. And thanks for spending some time with us on Off to the Races this morning.
Oh, thank you very much. It was my pleasure to join you.
Amy Moore joining us on Off to the Races this morning. A little bit of horse racing experience in her youth, a little bit. She was galloping for Del Carroll Sr., but after a long hiatus, she's back in the game and an up-and-coming breeder here in Virginia. One horse we want to also mention before we go into break that is racing today up at Aqueduct is Virginia Thoroughbred, a VTA award-winning champion, Repo Rocks, who is going for his fourth win today up at Aqueduct in the Stymie Stakes, $125,000 race. This is what he did last time out in the Toboggan Stakes.
Repo Rocks is looking for a way out, is going to tip to the outside and make it three across the track with a quarter mile left to go. 45.76 for a half mile time. Pirate Rick at the rail, Little Vic in between horses, and Repo Rocks is now taking the lead. It's Repo Rocks, who's now a full length in front. Drafted is making up some late ground. Repo Rocks is two lengths clear with a final furlong to go. Repo Rocks is striding away. It's Repo Rocks is the 16th pole, now five lengths clear. Repo Rocks is gonna dominate the Toboggan. Repo Rocks wins it.
Going for his four straight win, all under Jamie Ness, who is the trainer there, Andrew Wolfson, set to ride. And of course, the favorite in the Stymie Stakes today, Virginia Bred, bred by Miss Oliver Islin. So maybe Amy Moore can fill those shoes, as it's so difficult to replace that generation of Virginia breeders. But an opportunity there for Repo Rocks to make it four in a row in the Stymie Stakes in a field of six. We're headed to break on Off to the Races. When we come back, we'll have Frank Vespy join the show. He'll speak with Scott Wyckoff. And going into music, a little bit of Chris Stapleton. I don't think this is the last Stapleton we'll hear. Derby Bill might have another tune here in about 15 minutes or so. Thanks for spending your Saturday morning with us. We'll see you on the other side.
Live racing at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races rolls on every Wednesday through Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern through March 1st, and every Thursday through Saturday through the month of October. Mark your calendars for Friday, August 25th, for the 15th renewals of the Grade 2 $1 million Charlestown Classic and Grade 3 $750,000 Charlestown Oaks, now the richest three-year-old filly sprint stakes race in North America. So come see us here at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races. Learn more at Hollywood Casino Charlestown.
The first ever spring harness racing season at Shenandoah Downs kicks off April 1st. No fooling. Post time every Saturday and Sunday is 1 o'clock. Parking and admission are always free at Woodstock, located off of I-81 in the cradle of the Shenandoah Valley. Disappointed that you can't make live racing? Wager online with Twin Spires, TVG, ExpressBet, Naira Bets, or at any Rosie's Gaming Emporium or Virginia Horseplay OTB. Find out more at ShenandoahDowns.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Frank Vespy here on Off to the Races Radio, powered by the Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. Going to bring in our next guest here as we're living the dream. Scott Wyckoff is a longtime reporter for WBAL Radio in Baltimore, a Cleveland area native. He's an Edward R. Murrow Award winner, an Eclipse Award winner, an Old Hilltop Award winner. Hey, Scott, you got an extra award for me?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I've been lucky. I guess I've fooled them, or I've run into some judges that like that Midwestern twang that I bring to the radio.
Now, you have said that your favorite of your awards it was that you were the honorary postmaster for the 2017 Preakness. And I guess my question is, take us through a day in the life of the honorary postmaster.
I mean, that was unbelievable. Each year at the Preakness, they literally set up a post office in the historic grandstand at Pimlico, and I don't know how they decided to pick me, but they chose me, and boy, I was large and in charge, moving around, putting stamps on boxes, sending stuff off. I think the Postal Service made a fortune on me because I ended up buying a bunch of Preakness glasses and sending them to all my family and friends because I wanted the postmark on it. The funny thing was, too, that at the Alibi Breakfast where they announced the award, I introduced the local person from the post office in Baltimore as actually the Postmaster General for the United States, which became over the next year quite a joke, and it made its way all the way to Washington, D.C., and it was something that folks were talking quite a bit about.
Now, you mentioned the postmark. Does the postmark say that you're the postmaster on it?
Well, it didn't. All of them didn't, but what I did was I would, kind of like they do with the Sagamore Rye, whoever bottles the rye whiskey puts their name on the label. So that's mm-hmm. that's what I was doing. I would actually write my name on the box.
So we're talking to the former Baltimore Preakness Postmaster, Scott Wyckoff here. Scott, you sort of, you know, you straddle two worlds a little bit. You're a mainstream reporter. On any day, we might find you covering crime or something happening at City Hall or the dedication of a new building or all the stuff going on in the Baltimore area or Navy sports. Lots of different things, but you're also a guy who does a lot of horse racing stuff and over the years has covered a lot of horse racing for BAL. I guess one question, because you have covered a lot of things on BAL sort of outside the main sort of racing season, has that been a challenge sort of getting the station to say, yeah, sure, go ahead and cover this racing thing?
Well, the great thing was that when I made the move from WNAL radio in D.C. to Baltimore, the station at that point had really was embracing horse racing. Jeff Beauchamp was the program director, one of the general managers of the station, and he grew up in Baltimore with a real love of Pimlico, going to the track with his father, and really developed a lot of programming around racing because of the stories that they found that they could tell on WBAL and the sounds of racing and the characters and all the stories that surrounded Baltimore and what the horse industry meant to the state of Maryland. So I've been really fortunate for over 20 years being able to be someone who's embraced that, and the Hearst Corporation that owns the station has really given me full reign to tell these stories. And, you know, with all that's going on right now, I mean, there's just incredible stories to be told. I mean, just last weekend out at Laurel Park at Winterfest with a real nice crowd and a really neat day of racing with Eastern Bay, the emotional winner of the General George, on the same day that the jockey that used to ride the 9-year-old was honored, the late Avery Wissman, who tragically lost his life and passed away earlier in the year, honored on the same day that the horse won the featured race. I mean, those are just amazing stories, not only in the sport, but also of the part of the fabric of Maryland, talking about these horses that many of them are born and bred on farms in Maryland that are so much a part of the economy of Maryland that, you know, that kind of jumps off the page to me. But also, you know, kind of the things that we're dealing with now, the future of Laurel Park and Pimlico remaining up in the air. Also an interesting story that's just kind of developing right now is that the return of the historic Fairhill races in May up in Fairhill has been put on hold again. I mean, this is a real part of the racing tradition in Maryland, the flat races and steeplechase races there, even though they put millions of dollars to renovate the turf course for the very successful Maryland five-star that has gone on there in the last few years. This great day of racing that usually happens the week after the Preakness, it's been put on hold for several years now, and apparently negotiations with the new Westmore administration have kind of stalled with the folks at Fairhill Foundation. So, you know, it's amazing the type of stories that evolve from racing, and people might initially say, well, you know, horse racing, this and that, but the tentacles really in the state of Maryland reach far and wide.
Yeah, you're certainly right about that. And talking about the Avery Wiseman ceremony last week, I was talking with Lynn Cash, who's we had Lynn on the show last week. He's the trainer of Eastern Bay who won the General George, and talking with him afterwards, and he kind of said, you know, after that ceremony where they've, you know, connected Avery to Eastern Bay, it kind of felt like this is how this day had to end, you know, with Eastern Bay winning the General George. And yeah, I was thinking, and I wrote about this on the racingbiz.com, you know, it's like usually when people say, oh, it was meant to be, I think, oh, yeah, here comes the mystical mumbo jumbo. But last week, it kind of actually really did feel a little bit like something was going on, didn't it, Scott?
It really did. I mean, the symmetry is amazing, and just the story of the horse, of the owners, of the trainer, of the tragic loss of the jockey. I mean, everything really coming together. And so often in racing, these stories start to evolve, but as is any other sport, you know, you have a winner and a loser at the end. And oftentimes there's a huge buildup in these stories. We learn a lot about it, and they're great stories, but then in the end, there's another story that kind of breaks off from there. But this one was just amazing, you know, how Eastern Bay could win this race, you know, a horse that's once again up for the Renaissance Awards here in the state of Maryland that are going to be starting to be announced on Monday, that are going to be given out later in the month, the top horses, jockeys, owners, trainers, breeders in Maryland, how this all came together. And I think the best part of the day was seeing Avery's parents and family and friends there, feeling the love of the whole horse racing community towards them in this really difficult time.
Yeah, no, I one thing horse racing really does get right is it pulls together for its own when they need them. I wanted to ask you, Scott, as a guy sort of straddling these worlds, you know, covering racing, but even more covering lots and lots of other things, you know, as well as anybody, racing's had its issues over the years. And if magically tomorrow I said, okay, Scott Wyckoff, you're in charge of racing's kind of message and PR and branding, what's the story racing should be telling that it isn't to attract more sort of mainstream interest?
Well, I think the story is twofold. The sweeping reach of the people that are involved in racing, especially, you know, in a state like Maryland or in Virginia, what it means, it's kind of a hidden secret of what it means to the actual economy. And there's so many stories there, but also with the huge popularity in gambling and wagering now, and what people can do with a phone in their hand. And we've all talked about, you know, the importance of sports wagering that's moved through the region now, but the value of horse racing wagering, I mean, the money that they can be made. We talk so much about people who bet on these different sporting events and games. There's only, you know, kind of a cap on the kind of money you can make off of betting a local game. But, I mean, in horse racing, you know, on a 9 race card at any track, the possibilities for making money are there. So I think that's kind of something that's gotten lost in this whole sports wagering, that the horse racing is still an incredible value and an incredible way to not only enjoy a sporting event, but also maybe walk away with having won some money from that sporting event.
Talking with Scott Wyckoff, WBAL reporter, and coming up briefly on the end of our segment. But I did want to ask Scott, so what is, in your view, the best racing story that you've covered?
Boy, there have been so many. You know, sometimes I come back to Ben's Cat, the great King Leatherberry horse. And it was just so much fun going to the track and seeing a trainer like King Leatherberry is now in the Hall of Fame, and the things that he has done over the years, but how his whole life story kind of culminated in this one horse that kind of catapulted him, someone who probably should have been in the Hall of Fame years ago, but this one horse that turned into this classic sprinter form that kind of was his conduit to the Racing Hall of Fame. That was really neat. Also, I'll Have Another was a horse that came into town for the Preakness early after the Kentucky Derby, which a lot of horses typically don't. Had a great training team led by Doug O'Neill, and it was one of those things where I just kind of connected with Doug and with his team, and I was kind of embedded with them for the 2 weeks here in Baltimore leading up to the Preakness, and it was kind of neat how that evolved and continued on, even though the horse didn't run in the Belmont and didn't have the opportunity to go for the Triple Crown. That was kind of neat. And then I just kind of think about the different people that I've met over the years and the people that are so warm to me, whether I'm at the track or at their breeding farm or at, you know, maybe their store where they do things. Or, you know, even this past few weeks ago, I did a video for the horse racing industry in the state of Maryland that was played during an event in Annapolis. And people just out of the blue saying, hey, it was neat to see and hear your voice doing that. And even now with this, the new Maryland Horse Library and Education Center in Reisterstown, I'm hoping to put together a lot of the features that I've done on WBAL radio that people can access in the library so they can kind of hear these stories of the different people. Because I really think the biggest thing that racing's been to me is the stories that I've been able to tell on radio. I mean, it is amazing the stories that come out of the racetrack, that come out of the breeding farms, that really jump off the radio and that have really helped make my career.
And Scott, I think as a parting gift here, I feel like you can't really, and I know you can say this, you can't really say you've covered horse racing in Maryland until you've been stuck in the elevator at Pimlico. Is that a fair statement?
Fair statement. Opening day several years ago at Pimlico, I had been covering a breaking news story just off of Cold Spring Lane, not too far from Pimlico, and then I ran over to the track for opening day, and I was going to head up to the press box to interview the Tom Chukas, the general manager. So I get onto this classic old elevator at Pimlico and start my way up, and boom, it stops. And this was a pretty warm spring day in late April, early May, and I'm thinking, what the heck is going on here? And I was stuck between, I think, the third and the fourth floors, and I could hear the different Pimlico staff on their walkie-talkies talking about, you know, the elevator's stuck, this guy's stuck. And then I heard Tom Chukas, the general manager, you know, with some kind of raw language that's not suitable for radio, talking about, let's get this guy out of there before he starts doing live reports from there. Because they, you know, they kind of knew that was my MO doing breaking news, but I could hear them and rushing to get me out. I mean, I wasn't stuck for a long time, but it was an interesting thing to hang your hat on, say, yes, I've done that, I've been there, and it's just kind of another story that we could all add to the books down the road that we're all going to write.
Yeah, absolutely. That'll be I've got my own stuck in the elevator story, so we'll have to compare notes when we write those books. So Scott Wyckoff, thank you so much for joining us here on Off to the Races. Look forward to seeing you out at the track soon.
Oh, thanks so much, and thank you for all you do with your stories and the racing biz and the radio show and Off to the Races and everything to not only, you know, promote the game of racing, but also to tell these great stories here in the Mid-Atlantic region that kind of come off what racing is.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the kind words. That was WBAL reporter, Clips Award winner, numerous other awards, Scott Wyckoff joining us here. And Nick Hahn, we'll throw it back to you.
Boy, the elevator at Pimlico at the Preakness, I mean, it's a relic. Where else can you ride an elevator where what floor you're on, you're reading on something that was written in pencil? You know, when when that little piece of tape moves around and you see, like, is it 2 X'd out 3, you know, yeah. In terms of what floor you're on.
It is quite a thing. The elevator at Pimlico is quite a thing, for sure.
I've never been stuck on it. It's only felt like I have been. But
I have been. I don't recommend it, but I do sort of feel like you kind of have to be stuck once. So I'm sure it can be arranged for you this year, Nick.
I'm taking the stairs. he did mention the impact of just because this was done. It was such a big study when this was done back in Virginia in 2019. The impact in Virginia, over $500,000, employing over 5,000 people in directly and indirectly. Can't be understated. I'm glad he brought that up as part of the end of the interview and part of the industry, because we don't really state it enough on the show, the impact of horse racing and breeding in Virginia alone is that. I can't imagine what it is in Maryland. But a great interview, Frank, and next week we'll get an apt replacement. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm going to be, we're going to Key West and I'm going to be traveling on next Saturday. So you will be flying the plane without me, which might make it fly more smoothly.
We'll see how it goes, but it's safe travels and I'm sure I'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Frank.
All right.
Living the dream. Frank Vespe, living the dream, even if the dream is somewhere between the second and third floor of the Pimlico Grandstand. Right around the corner here with music to set the mood for the Rebel Stakes, which is run at Oaklawn Park today. Hopefully it won't be run in the dark like the Risen Star. I think the track was listed as dark last week. It was hard to see that race. Is Derby Bill Watson, and I think he has a little bit of Arkansas in his repertoire this morning. Now, Derby Bill may not get down to Arkansas, but he's going to get down on Arkansas, I'm sure, a little bit later with a couple wins. I'm sure an exacta, maybe a double. What other wagers can we find for Derby Bill this morning? Good morning. How you doing, big guy?
1-9. I've got a corned beef sandwich by the time the Rebel goes off at Oaklawn, the best food at a track in America, corned beef.
What are the odds of finishing it?
Finishing one? They have limits on me. I can't, you know, like you guys were talking about the press box at Pimlico, I had to use the freight elevator.
Do they have a freight elevator there at Pimlico? They have the escalators.
The guy was sweating bullets when I got on the elevator.
Cab Calloway once operated that elevator. Can you believe that?
Oh, yeah.
It lived across the street.
It's a rickety old place at Pimlico. Whole hilltop, very susceptible to engineering difficulties. Much better at Colonial Downs. Looking forward to the big races this summer at Colonial Downs. Just all these sheiks coming over from Saudi Derby today, and the biggest, you know, the big race today over there. So we're hoping some of them will come to Filtrate New Kent and hit the Dairy Queen.
Dairy Queen, the Arlington Million going to be run at Colonial Downs. The Secretariat Stakes, the Beverly D. I think they're going back to the original naming of that race. Congratulations with two fills. You outheaded me last week. I had Harlow Cap, but two fills. Actually had the lead there, and looks like his path is going to keep going forward for Larry Ravelli there, out of the Risen Star and into the Bluegrass, it sounds like.
Yeah, I thought he had a chance to win it, but the Loveberry went a little too quick on him, and he baited right at the end. He really had a good chance to win that race, so yeah, I was hoping he'd win it and solidify his place in the Forte Derby.
The feature race today, the Rebel Stakes, has a field of 11. It includes Verifying, who's a Justify colt, getting the drawing the rail there. Red Route 1, say that three times. Kind of a weird race in the fact that you got, coming from the 2, 3, and 4 holes, are all Asmussen horses. I mean, what are the chances that and they're bookended by Cox horses now that I realize this. Dwayne Lucas has a horse in the race. I mean, Kenneth McPeak has Frosted Departure in the race. This is a real interesting field. I was surprised when I looked this up this week. It is a $1 million race, the Rebel. I remember when that race was like $100,000, $150,000. A $1 million purse for this mile and a 16th on the dirt. And these full fields keep on filling the starting gate in these Derby prep races. One of the Asmussen horses is Gunpilot. We've seen horses come off the pace so much in the Derby prep so far, which has been a little bit out of the norm. Usually the front runners have been pretty dominant in the preps over the last few years, but that's certainly not the trend this year. We'll give you first bid on the Rebel Stakes here. Give us your thoughts on the race and your pick.
Yeah, the race is more top heavy than Raquel Welch, rest in peace. Verifying being 2-1. I mean, you got solid horses. I'm glad it's a big field so I can try to Giant Mastiff's about 2-1. You might have 3-1 Reincarnates, the interesting play here. You got like three on the top that are just could easily win. Reincarnates, my pick there, Nick. I'm reincarnating the horse that actually is trained by Bob Baffert, and he switched him to Tim Yakteen for this race so he can get some Derby points, because the 28th was a cutoff for Baffert to switch his horses into the Kentucky Derby picture. So Reincarnate, Good Magic, Colt here barely won the Sham here, so I'm really concerned about, you know, if he's the step up here to a $1 million race is kind of big. But Johnny V jumps on board this one for the first time, so I'm gonna give him a shot. Johnny V can calm the horse down in a nice big field. I mean, you got Gun Runner horses, you got Steve Asmussen, who just won his 10,000th race, has like three horses in this race, and they're all Gun Runner horses with Gun Pilot and what's it, Red Route One. They're always dangerous. The Gun Runners love that dirt in Arkansas more than I like Brisket. DeZorma's got one in here, Confidence Game, a long shot. And your NASCAR people like a horse called Talladega. Big long shot there with Flavian Pratt up. That one's a local horse that loves Oaklawn Park, runs there locally. So you earned a spot in here with a win there. So the locals might be going for a long shot there. But reincarnate me, Nick. Reincarnate me. Your worst nightmare.
Can you, Derby Bill, dropping a Raquel Welch there? We did lose Raquel Welch this week, but hoping for a reincarnation of a fantastic voyage of, if you follow me there, Derby Bill, with the trip of the Sham Stakes there with Reincarnate. I'm going to go with Verifying here. I actually have a future bet that I placed several weeks ago on this horse, so I'm not jumping off now and hoping that Florent Giroux gets the job done for Brad Cox there. I'm not worried about the rail post for this race. May not be as far off the pace as what's been trending here in the Triple Crown so far, but I think horse will perform well. Coming up, was in that Breeders' Cup Juvenile, a little bit of a rest, just like Forte is getting right now, and Brad Cox trying to get the timing right to be best on that first Saturday in May. Let's maybe take a look at the race right before it, the Honeybee, which is run at a mile and 16th as well for the three-year-old fillies here. A field of 12. I did not get a chance to check for scratches here. You might have them up, but this has Wet Paint, which is another Brad Cox blame horse, which would kind of follow on the motif with Amy Moore's Forte there. Being by Blame, Take Charge Brianna is a curling horse in this field. What are your thoughts on the Honeybee for the three-year-old fillies?
Man, that Wet Paint's attractive there. Isn't that the Rolling Stones album, Wet Paint?
Yep.
Yeah, yep. Wet Paint's for your younger people. That's Rolling Stones. an old group that was around years ago and still around. Little humor there. Towelhead. Calling you a towelhead.
Okay.
They call it towhead. I call it towelhead, but you can call it towhead. Yeah, man. It's got to make you laugh, man. It's a happy time. Things.
I was searching.
Derby heading towards the Fountain of Youth, so we're having some fun. Michael Maker's horse here, 9-2. Just two outstanding runs and a nice allowance win at Oaklawn. So a horse for the turf there at Oaklawn. I'm gonna try it. Towhead.
Towhead there, Derby Bill's pick. I'm gonna go with Wet Paint. Actually, my brother Gordon on 3WB in Charlottesville used to have a radio show called Wet Paint, but that's not why I'm picking this horse. I just like the way the horse seems to be coming into form, like the breeding of the horse. And Flavian Pratt there as well. You mentioned the Saudi Cup. Bob Baffert with two interests there. Country Grammar was second in the Saudi Cup last year, but came back and won the Dubai World Cup. What are your thoughts in the Saudi Cup, which is run today?
Yeah, they're running right now over there. I mean, the money is just ungodly.
$20 million.
It'll be on FS2, if you can say that on radio. Live at 12:30, so if you want to tune into that and then switch right back to ESPN basketball or whatever, ESPN Richmond basketball. Although you don't want Richmond basketball last night. It's not pretty. DeTerra, Country Grammar for Baffert, 6-1. I like Country Grammar a little bit here, and hopefully DeTerra can get Country Grammar to come down to New Kent this summer and bring Bob Baffert back to New Kent. But I went with a horse, June Lightbolt, Nick. I put all my Japanese house of steak visits on this one. Japan horse, Ryan Moore, 8-1. Very, okay. Very juicy wok of food for Derby Bill if this one wins.
There you go. Derby Bill's pick is, I think, the 5 horse, if I saw that right. Six horse in the 8th race in the Saudi Cup. Thanks a lot, Derby Bill. We'll talk to you next week. Good luck today in the Rebel Stakes. Want to thank everybody that was on the show today. Daryl Wood with the Secretariat Monument Update. Amy Moore. We'll have a big weekend next week. Scott Wyckoff is not stuck in the elevator. Neither is Frank Besby at Pimlico. And, of course, Derby Bill with his selections. And James Flowers, great job today. We'll talk to you next week on Off to the Races, post time, 10 o'clock.